From KCUR Studios, this is Statehouse Blend, Missouri. I'm Brian Ellison. We all know 2017 has been an unusual political year, to say the least. For those paying attention in Missouri, the past year has been no less interesting here than it has been nationally. We've seen the transformation of a relatively unknown outsider into a globe-trotting governor who might just be the most interesting man in Missouri. Division abounded in the General Assembly. Sometimes even the Republicans who dominate the House and the Senate and now the governor's mansion were divided among themselves. But the raft of new laws they did pass has made Missouri a different place, whether it's a more pro-business and pro-growth place, or a more anti-poor people and anti-justice for all place. That depends on your perspective. 2018 is shaping up to be no less fascinating. We've still got all the same characters and issues on the table, and now a looming election. Every week during this year's legislative session and then throughout this consequential political year ahead, we will be here to unpack what's happening and what it might mean for your life and to get to know the legislators and leaders who are making it happen. There's no lawmakers here this week, though. We're kicking off the new year with a roundtable of journalists who keep a close eye on Missouri politics, and they're here to give us their takes on the big stories of 2017 and what they'll be watching as 2018 gets underway. Joining me are, from the Kansas City Star, recently praised by the journalism watchers at Pointer for going big with their editorial board, a member of that board, Dave Helling. Hey,
yeah,
Dave.
Yeah, I've been going big for a long time, I'm afraid. Right.
It was not a comment on the board itself, I don't think. The editor of Harvest Public Media, a reporting collaboration based here at KCUR, and the immediate past political editor of St. Louis Public Radio, Erica Hunsinger. Hello, Erica.
Hi, Brian. Thanks
Your
for
first
having me.
Time on Statehouse Blend.
My first time on Statehouse Blend. Thank you.
Are you nervous?
Not yet.
Well, we'll see what we can do. And joining us from St. Louis Public Radio, the man now filling Erica's shoes on an interim basis, ace political reporter Jason Rosenbaum. Hey, Jason.
Thank you for having me.
And you're never nervous about being on the program.
Slightly.
Okay, we'll see what happens. We do have a lot to talk about, but let's start with a look back. If we had to name a Missouri person of the year, I have a feeling the person who we all would put at the top of the list, who mattered the most for government and politics in the state this year, it really can't be anyone but Republican Governor Eric Greitens, can it?
Well, Eric Greitens is clearly the dominant figure in politics in the state of Missouri in 2017, and will be in 2018. In ways that we are not accustomed to in Missouri. Typically, the governor always is the most important political figure in almost any state. But in Missouri, he clashes as often with Republicans as he does with Democrats. And that is almost unique, particularly in this part of the country. The majority party typically acts like the majority party, cobbles together an agenda of its own, and then executes it. But Eric Greitens picked fight after fight after fight with his own members during the session in 2017, and then especially so after they left, in terms of his appointments and some other things. And so for me, the key dynamic in the 2018 session will be whether Eric Greitens can join hands with his colleagues in the legislature, or whether those disagreements will continue and escalate, in which case Eric Greitens may find himself on an interesting island.
Jason Rosenbaum, you've covered Missouri politics for a while over the years. Have you ever seen anyone like Eric Greitens?
Not really, because at this point in Missouri history, I can't recall in modern Missouri history somebody who came into office without having any electoral experience before then. So it was always going to be an unprecedented situation. I think what made it even more surprising is he came into office with probably more Republican legislators than any other Republican governor in Missouri history. And while there definitely were tangible accomplishments that will affect the lives of thousands, if not millions, of people, there were also just tremendous missed opportunities because of the aforementioned infighting that Dave mentioned. So It's not that infighting is a new thing in Missouri politics.
Sure.
There was plenty of that when Matt Blunt was governor, and I'm sure that there was infighting when there were Democratic governors in a Democratic legislature. But going into 2018, the main storyline is how the Republican-led legislature is planning to fight back against their own Republican governor. which probably wasn't the storyline at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, I mean, Erica Huntzinger, you started around the same time as Governor Greitens did in looking at Missouri politics most intensely. What's your impression? I mean, do you think this is this an act? Is this his strategy? Or is this just kind of the way that his personality operates?
I think he's kind of feeling his way through this, at least for the first half of it. And, you know, as Jason and I and Joe Manis at St. Louis talked about a lot, was just that it was so unusual and that it didn't really seem like he quite knew how things worked in the legislature. Now, sometimes that's good because it kind of disrupts and forces people to think outside the box. But in this situation, he wasn't an effective advocate for any of the bills or for most of the bills for the GOP. And
including some things that he had said were his highest priorities.
Exactly.
Yeah, I may be a minority of one here. But I think that the approach of Governor Greitens and his allies, which we should never discount because he's getting some advice, obviously, is less attributable to his naivete or his newness than it is to a calculated strategy. I think that Eric Greitens and the people around him decided early on that they would be a sort of a Trumpian figure in Missouri politics. They would be outside the swamp, that it would be a plague on all your houses, that I'm fighting for the people of every press release from his office is, I'm fighting for you, I'm fighting for the people of Missouri. And included in that is a sharp critique of partisan politics, Republicans and Democrats. Where the naivete may come in is some assumption that somehow the Senate and the House won't react to that, that somehow you can fly around the state, beat the crap out of the legislative branch and not have them be angry about it. Right. That's what maybe they didn't anticipate. And again, that's what I think the big dynamic in 2018 is going to be, because there are some legislators who are happy to take it, you know, because they think that Eric Greitens can accomplish the things they want to accomplish, which happened in 2017, right to work, some of the pro-business stuff that passed, the discrimination bill. I mean, you know, the
minimum wage.
There are successes if you're a Republican majority with Eric Greitens. The question is whether there will be enough legislators who think that there are things upon which we can make progress in 2018, or will there be such a pushback, particularly on the Senate side, that nothing gets done? And again, I think that's the main dynamic going forward.
Well, and Dave, you mentioned the sort of the drain the swamp mentality or the campaign issue. One of the things that was surprising to a lot of people once Governor Greitens took office was that a part of the story has been his own willingness to receive support from so-called dark money groups.
Oh, of course.
The setting up of the 501c down the street from the Capitol, not too far from his office, with some of his former campaign aides,
right.
People back and forth between his office and there. It seems to me that we aren't yet done with Governor Greitens shaping his identity, who he wants to be in terms of an outsider or someone who plays by,
well,
by kind of
I
the
think
old rules.
He, but I think, and Jason, you may or may not agree with this again, but I think that it is he has made a decision that the public doesn't really differentiate between his own ethical problems and a broader critique of government in general as being corrupt or swamp-like or whatever. They don't connect dark money with ethics reform. They don't connect, you know, erasable text messages with violations of the Sunshine Law. That's his calculation.
And is he right?
I'm not sure he's right. And I think we saw evidence of that in 2017 when the first thing out of his mouth was, we need ethics reform and, you know, the revolving door has to go and this is a corrupt institution and I'm going to fix it. And then all the stories started to surface about, you know, opaque donations to the inaugural and dark money contributions to this 501c4. When all of that started to surface, the enthusiasm among state legislators for ethics reform, which is never high to begin with,
right,
shrunk to almost nothing. And so the whole idea that Eric Greitens could claim he's cleaned up the swamp disappeared in large part because of his own ethical shortcomings.
Jason, I mean, you've spoke with a lot of these Republican legislators over the course of the year. Do you feel like any of them are finding themselves kindred spirits with what the governor's trying to do?
Well, I think that they fall into several different categories. There, I would say, are a vocal minority of Republicans who have basically decided to wage holy war against the governor. That includes people like Senator Ryan Silvey, Senator Gary Romine,
Rob Schaff.
Rob Schaff. People that are making no bones about their disparagement about the governor. Then I think that there are Republicans that are outwardly supportive but privately very skeptical of a lot of his moves. And I think that there are probably a great deal of legislators that are supportive of both of his approach and his policy agenda. It really depends on who you ask. And I'm sure that of those several groups, there has been at various times agreement with things that the governor has done and disagreement with the governor has done. I would say, for example, the way that the commissioner of education was ousted, I think regardless of Republicans you ask, I think it's pretty evident that it was not executed particularly well. There obviously have been other instances where a governor has stacked a board to get an ally right in place, but it was done with a lot more strategy and less flat-footedness than would have happened, basically.
Yeah, and we should review that story just quickly. The State Board of Education had up to five positions to be filled over the past year. The governor, while the State General Assembly was out of session, put his folks on that board. But several of them, when it became clear they were not going to support the governor's effort to remove the current commissioner of education, either resigned or were actually just removed, or a new appointee was put in place by the governor. A total of 10 people appointed to those five spots.
None of whom were confirmed by the Senate.
Right. They'll all be up for confirmation when the Senate convenes, but they've already done the job.
Right. And I think it's so important to focus on this story because I think it says so much about Eric Greitens' approach to the General Assembly. It would have been easy and perhaps advisable for the governor, if he wanted to get rid of the education commissioner through the board, to do so in January or February. Make those appointments once the General Assembly is back in session. Get your allies to approve them at the Senate level. Then get rid of her. Instead, he made all of these appointments, fired people who did not vote the way he expected them to, all to get rid of her in December or November, whatever, but late November, early December.
Yeah.
That's like poking a stick in the eye of the Senate. That's, in essence, saying you are meaningless in this process. And that, to me, says so much about his relationship with other politicians in the state and suggests that there will be more clashes rather than fewer in 2018.
Erica, is there anything we're missing in the Governor Greitens story of the year?
I was thinking about two things that he did kind of on his own. He didn't really need the legislature to help him at all. And one of them was delaying the execution of Marcellus Williams in August.
Yes.
Just at the last hour. And it was a total surprise for a lot of us who were following it. And I keep thinking about, you know, a lot of governors in conservative states that have pretty high execution rates, they don't do this. Yeah. And he instead just went ahead and said, I'm going to appoint a board and we're going to look into this new DNA evidence. That hadn't happened in 20 years, 25
right,
years.
Right. Including under Democrats.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think
including under Jay Nixon, who supervised execution after execution.
Right. So to me, that was kind of an interesting move from a guy who is technically conservative. And the other thing, even though they tried to get it through in the legislative session, but by executive order, putting a prescription drug monitoring program in place for the state, even though it's not perfect, you know, I think that was something that was kind of an olive branch to both sides, especially knowing that rural America has a really hard time with this right now. Mortality rates are down. 75% of farmers and farm workers have had some kind of like close connection to the opioid crisis. That, to me, was him stepping in and saying, we've got something that we need to discuss.
And we'll see. We'll see how far that goes or whether the legislature then comes up with some other solution
right.
because he's taken that lead. You know, before we turn away from Governor Greitens as the big story, I guess I also think that the next year will be very telling as to which Governor Greitens really emerges once he has now sort of settled into governing. We all know that he's a really smart
guy. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He's a graduate of Duke. I heard him recently speaking on another podcast, not a news podcast, a podcast called The Art of Manliness. I know you're a regular listener to that, Dave.
That's right. And contributor, actually.
Yes, I'm sure you are. But he was speaking about, based on his education about ancient Greek philosophers, and it's a very intellectual and intellectually capable governor that we have. That is not a side of himself that he showed during the campaign. His commercials do not reflect on Seneca and Aristotle. They reflect on machine guns and blowing right. things up. Which governor will emerge as the governing really gets underway in the coming years? And I think that's still an open question.
Jason, you want to take that one? I have my own views, but
it's a good question because I don't foresee, for example, the Republicans losing significant amount of legislators after this election cycle to where the governor still can pass whatever he wants with the legislature's approval. So I think once this session passes and they decide whether they want to continue on sort of the red meat Republican unfinished business train that they're on with, you know, curbing labor union power, restricting lawsuits some more, possibly cutting taxes and business regulations, I think that they're going to have to start dealing with larger, seemingly intractable problems like funding roads and bridges, possibly figuring out a way to raise pay for state employees, which has been a problem for years, possibly expanding health care for the poor and elderly. So if they start to deal with some of the larger problems I just mentioned, we may see a less combative governor and a more pragmatic, let's get things done governor, because that's what it will take to actually deal with those problems.
Right. And let's just throw in housing, low-income housing and rural housing, which will also be an issue. And really the way the poor are treated in Missouri sort of globally will be something that people would be paying attention to. But I want to go back, Brian, to what you said about how Eric Greitens is a smart guy, and he is. He may be one of the smartest politicians I've ever met, which is why I don't give him a pass for being a newbie. He's smart enough to know what he's doing. The key dynamic for me is his alleged White House ambitions, which everyone denies, but everyone else assumes
right.
is actually a fact. And if those ambitions are going to kick in, it will happen after the 2018 midterms. And so 2019, 2020, if the governor's really interested in running for the White House, and for whatever reason Donald Trump doesn't want to be a candidate or whatever, that will really kick in. So 2018 for Eric Greitens is an absolutely critical year. I mean, does he do what Jason suggests, which is tackle big problems in a collaborative way, certainly with a Republican bent, but in consultation with the leadership in the House and the Senate? And if so, I think the first year will be seen more as more of an aberration than anything else. But if they continue to fight over everything and Eric Greitens continues to take criticism personally, as he clearly does, then I think the skirmishes will continue. Missouri will not accomplish very much, and that may impact what he decides in 2019 and 20 going forward.
Well, let's actually turn then to what might be accomplished in 2018. The General Assembly session in a particular election year is often not known for being the most productive, and yet there are some pretty substantial issues that will be before legislators in 2018, some of which have been on the table in 2017, but others of which might emerge anew. Let's talk about some of those, and maybe we'll go around the table. What do you think is one of the critical issues that the Missouri General Assembly will deal with in 2018. Erica?
I think it's going to be education. It's clear as part of this wrangling over the State Board of Education that there's something behind charter school expansion, taking it beyond Kansas City, taking it beyond St. Louis. And you've got people in rural areas saying, we don't want it. We're not getting enough money for our public schools as it is. Just giving the money to kids to go to private schools isn't going to help. And if there's a bill that there's nothing filed yet for charter school expansion for education savings accounts, which are essentially vouchers.
Right.
That is something that I do think you're going to see. You know, there's 12 states that already have this. This is a school choice debate.
And essentially a deduction made available for it in the federal tax reform. So the way is being paved.
The way is paved. The way is paved.
Education, one big issue. That's one of the budget issues under conversation. Jason Rosenbaum, what's one big issue you think will come up?
I think that there will be an increased effort to blunt the power of organized labor even more. Obviously, the big thing that happened at the beginning of session was the passage of Right to Work, which is shorthand supporters used to describe a policy that bars unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues as a condition of employment. That law is actually frozen right now because labor unions were able to get enough signatures to put that up for a vote next
right.
year.
Ensuring that it'll be on everyone's mind for the entire year.
But I think a number of things are going to happen. First of all, I think the legislature may move the vote on that to August so it doesn't become a turnout mechanism for Democrat Claire McCaskill's reelection bid. And then I think that they might do the things that they didn't do last year. And that could be basically getting rid of the prevailing wage laws that's very helpful to construction labor unions across the state, possibly making it more difficult for unions to automatically deduct dues.
Right. And although it's possible, perhaps likely, that labor would react the same way to a prevailing wage change that they did to Right to Work and try and force a statewide referendum on it, and they have shown the muscle to at least get the signatures needed for such an attempt. So whether that gives the General Assembly any pause or not, we'll find out in 2018. My own view is much of the session, and I think, Jason, you've written about this, certainly Jason Hancock, my colleague at The Star, has written about the push for tax reform and a tax cut in an election year will be huge, particularly since we get wildly different estimates as to what the impact of federal tax reform will be on revenue in the state of Missouri. There's always sort of a perpetual budget crisis in Missouri anyway, so there may have to be some rescissions. A year ago, there were some serious cuts that the governor had to make fairly quickly. So, you know, throw all of that into a boiling pot, you know, tax reform on the federal level, the desire for tax reductions, at least in income taxes, maybe some increase in the gasoline tax for transportation might be in the mix. I think that's what's going to dominate the session.
Yeah, I think so too. With the specter of Kansas's tax cuts looming over Missouri even more than it did over the federal government.
Correct. Although it's clear that any bona fide presidential candidate in the Republican field will have to show a record of cutting taxes. And so one can see Governor Greitens enthusiastically endorsing some sort of tax increase and then living within our means and making cuts to higher ed or some of the other line items that he has the authority over. And I just think that'll be the thing people will talk about.
Right. And in a way, rightly so, because I think what we saw in the last budget discussion was higher ed getting massive cuts and people in higher ed saying, really, that's it. There's nothing more to cut. Social services, same thing. There's nothing left to cut. Well, there's going to be more cuts. There have to be more cuts. Revenues are going to go down, and it's only a question of how much.
Right.
That, I think, will be a dominant issue, and whether the legislators want to be the ones to take the lead and decide what to cut, or they want to leave those hard decisions to the governor, as they often have in the past.
Right. And so when Jason talks about a raise for state workers, that's very problematic. You know, higher ed says it's been cut as much as it can. We're going to see
can't cut the corrections department anymore. You can't cut like public defenders anymore.
I will just tell you, having watched Kansas, Erica, for five years, it's clear that when revenues fall far short of expectations, it's amazing how many nickels and dimes can be found in the seat cushions. And Missouri may be in that place.
Let's continue to talk about the year ahead because it is an election year. And there's no question that one of the dominant things will be not what happens in the Capitol building, but what's happening with people who are either trying to get to the Capitol or trying to get to Washington, D.C. And I think the United States Senate campaign is, of course, the most significant of those races. Attorney General Josh Hawley this week saying his attention is fully on defeating Claire McCaskill, which seems to overlook the fact he does have three Republican opponents in the primary. How do you think the whole Senate campaign will affect the political environment in Missouri, including in Jefferson City, in the year ahead? Jason?
Well, you do mention the three other opponents that Hawley has, but frankly, none of them have raised enough money or gotten enough organizational support at this point to be called credible rivals to Hawley. I know that Courtland Sykes has gotten like reams of attention because he says wacky things, but the last time I checked his FEC reports, he's raised $500. And Hawley will probably have more money than God going into the primary, given that he will probably have the support of every national Republican organization that there is. So until something changes, like, he's the prohibitive favorite to win that primary, which makes him a huge target. I think that there's going to be a pretty intense effort to basically discredit everything that he says and does, both in his official capacity as Attorney General and his campaign to try to unseat McCaskill. Make no mistake about it. Missouri definitely has become more Republican since McCaskill was first elected in 2006. But Senator McCaskill is probably one of the sharpest political figures in modern Missouri history. And she's also a tremendous retail politician that has made a pretty concerted effort to go to the Republican-leaning parts of the states in rural Missouri and stake a claim there. I think that the key for her to get another term is she has to have three things happen for her. She has to have very sizable turnout for her in St. Louis, Kansas City, and Columbia, which are typically the places where most Democrats live in the state. She needs to either win or at least compete in the aforementioned rural parts of the state. That's how she won in 2006 and 2012. And she also, I think, has to do very well in the suburbs in places like St. Charles County, Jefferson County, Lincoln County, and over in the Kansas City area, Buchanan County, Platte County, and Clay County. Those are places where she's traditionally done well in her campaigns, both for auditor and for senator. And a lot of those places have become a lot more Republican over the last 4 years, especially places like Jefferson County and Lincoln County, which are now very red. And regardless of what plays out during the campaign, if she cannot do those three things, then I think that she may have a difficult path to reelection. But as I said before, I would not count her out in any shape or form. And I think that there's going to be a tremendous effort both locally and nationally to make sure that she has robust support.
Right. Yeah, I just pitch in here a little bit. The things that are on Claire McCaskill's side include the fact that in 2016, which was a plus 19% margin for Donald Trump, Roy Blunt won by 3 points over Jason Kander. So there's obviously some ticket splitting going on between Democrats who support Donald Trump and then support the Democrat for the U.S. Senate. A 3-point margin can be made up if it's a Democratic wave year, which it may well turn out to be.
Right. Trump of 2016 is not necessarily going to be Donald Trump of 2018.
Correct. And Donald Trump won't be on the ballot. So you won't get that bump, whatever bump there is, that maybe even Roy Blunt got in 2016 in beating Jason Kander. So I think that suggests that Claire McCaskill has a path going forward. If she runs the right kind of campaign, which she's very smart about that stuff. Now, she is not facing Todd Akin. She will run against Josh Hawley, one assumes, who is smart in ways that even Eric Greitens isn't smart. I mean, Josh Hawley has sued the opioid-providing drug companies for the opioid crisis. He sued California for eggs, that appeals to rural areas. He seems like a much more rational centrist person than maybe even Eric Greitens. And let's just pause to note that when the controversy developed around Eric Greitens' use of an erasable text, Josh Hawley said, "I will investigate that." Now, that suggests to me, as a political matter, that Josh Hawley is trying to put a little daylight between himself and Eric Greitens. And so he's smart about that stuff. Yes. I mean, he's just a great candidate. Not only will he have a lot of money, Jason, but the amount of third-party money pouring into Missouri will strangle a frog. I mean, there's hundreds. You know,
that kill a yak.
I mean, right, right. There was I want to say $70 million in 2016 outside money. I would not be surprised at all if we get to $100 million in outside money in 2018 in
Missouri. It will be a good time for local TV.
The local TV guys are all going to make money. So it's going to be a fascinating race. But I think there is a path for Claire McCaskill. She knows how to use the incumbency tool to her advantage. It's a narrow path, but she has one.
Well, and let me seize on the conversation about the wave election, because that won't necessarily just affect the U.S. Senate race in Missouri. It could have an impact on the legislative races, or could it, I guess, is the question. The Missouri Democratic Party has made an unprecedented, really, effort to attract quality candidates statewide to run serious candidates in legislative right. districts where they've not been competitive for many years. Do you think there's any chance we'll see a whole new batch of Democrats?
How about the special election in Lee's Summit, which we just went through, in which the Democrat almost came from nowhere to win a strongly Republican Senate district? Having said
that, having a second Republican in the race
helped a little bit.
Didn't Sirpoy win by like 10 percentage points or 8 percentage points? Yeah. I really wouldn't classify that as close.
Yeah, it wasn't as close as a lot of people thought it
would
be.
Yes, but it was
true.
Closer than you would normally expect in that district. I mean, Lee's Summit is in eastern Jackson County is heavily Republican typically.
Yes.
But so you're right. I mean, by the way, drawing any firm conclusions about the entire legislature from one special election is probably a little optimistic. Mm-hmm. But I think overall, while Democrats will be more competitive in state legislative races, anyone who thinks that somehow they're going to take over either chamber is probably fooling himself or herself. Or even, you know, frankly, there are veto-proof majorities in both bodies now. I'm not sure the Democrats can even challenge that. I mean, it's just state legislative races are such a difficult, thing to figure out at that level. And so while I think there would be a Democratic wave that would help, say, a Claire McCaskill, or might even help some Democrats in congressional races, I don't think at the state legislative races will look at 2019 as much different from 2018.
And really, any Democrat that's out there that's trying to get elected can't. There's two things that they have to do, and they have to talk directly to voters to show them how they may have been negatively affected by any of the policies that have been put in by the state legislature or the Congress. But they have to be honest about it. They can't just kind of use them as, you know, like a boogeyman of some sort. So that's one thing. And they can't present themselves as the anti-Trump choice as a means of effective communication because, like Jason just said, that doesn't always work in certain areas, especially when you get state races versus congressional races.
Now, remember, though, Trump, you know, public opinion polls in Missouri showed Trump at a plus 3 or a plus 4 now, not plus 19. I mean, there has been some erosion in that. Again, I think it's a Democratic year, but you would need a hellacious Democratic year in Missouri to turn either house.
You would need a Roy Moore type style meltdown for that.
Yes, yes.
In the legislature.
In dozens of races,
exactly.
Not just one
exactly.
race. Lots of money, lots of. So I just think the chance of any major turnover at the legislative level is very difficult. Now, we saw that in Kansas. You know, in Kansas, it took 5 or 6 years, but eventually Kansas Republicans said, no, we're not going to, you know, deal with this. And so there was an important turnover of moderates and conservatives, even though in the same Republican Party. Missouri may be up for that, but my guess is not 2019 at all or 2018, but rather maybe 2020, 2022 before that wave hits in that.
All right. So we need to be wrapping this up, but I want to ask all of our guests one more question. I want a prediction for the year ahead. Your prediction for the big political story or a big political story in 2018. Let's start with Dave Helen.
I think that the legislature will try but fail to pass a tax cut in 2018. I mean, I think there will be a real attempt to cobble something together. And frankly, they may come up with something that sort of looks like a tax cut and may smell like a tax cut, but won't actually be one. I've said this on other shows. I think Claire McCaskill will win the race in 2018. I think it's going to be a Democratic year, plus 3 or 4 points. That's all she really needs. And frankly, I think that helps Nicole Galloway, by the way, a little bit, if she can get a little bit a better turnout of Democrats in urban areas. But Josh Hawley remains in the attorney general's job, obviously, and remains a player in Missouri politics.
There's three predictions from Dave Helley. Erica Hunsinger.
I'm going to keep this light. I think that as the bill states, we will make July 7th Missouri Sliced Bread Day.
It's the yeast we can do, right?
Oh.
Wow.
Yes.
That was from downtown.
That was
I didn't have a joke ready. I was just sitting here loafing.
Boo.
Wow. Jason, save us.
Please, Jason, give us a prediction.
First of all, I think that they actually should pass that because the sliced bread was invented in Chillicothe, Missouri.
Yes. 1928.
Yeah.
And I actually have a couple of friends from there, and I think we should honor that great city as much as we can. The one thing that I think will happen is I think that there will be an initiative to pass medical marijuana in the state of Missouri.
That.
And I think that it's going to be a very interesting thing to see whether there is a coalition between, you know, the traditional groups that want medical marijuana on more of the liberal side and also maybe some Republicans who may be more libertarian thinking and maybe could also see an ability to raise money from taxation on that. The real question for me is whether it will be through an initiative petition or whether the legislature will try to put its own initiative on the ballot. But I am thinking that there will be some vote, and I think that there will be a very good chance it will pass in November.
Yep,
I think that's a really good prediction. I'm going to say that the transportation is going to be a bigger issue this year than it has been for the past decade. The task force that's currently been working, doing a lot of work around the state, pretty bipartisan work, actually, I think is going to come in with some solid recommendations that are going to get serious attention in the General Assembly. What I'm not ready to predict is that they're going to actually gasoline tax increase on the ballot. So, but I think this could be the year that transportation feels like it's moving forward in Missouri, which Republicans and Democrats alike have said hasn't happened in a long time. So stay tuned for that. If any of that happens, we will be talking about it here on State House Blend. The legislative session, of course, starts at noon on January 3rd, and we'll see what happens after that. I want to thank all our guests. Dave Helling of the Kansas City Star.
Great to be here.
Erica Hunsinger of Harvest Public Media, KCUR.
Thank you very much.
And Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio.
Thank you.
State House Blend Missouri is a production of KCUR Studios. We had help this week from Chris Young. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already and tell your friends. Post about us on social media. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on NPR One. And hopefully we're wherever you get your podcasts. If we aren't, let us know. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at PTS Brian for state politics news and other stuff. And if you have an idea for the show or a question or something you just need to get off your chest, write to me, Brian at KCUR.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Happy New Year.